I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Going Off Track.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks, Brad. As promised, I had an embarrassing dating story.
And we're going to jump right into it.
Let's jump into it. Here's the thing.
Jonah is a single, attractive, rockin' dude living in Brooklyn, New York. Say no more.
I don't really like talking about my personal life on the podcast, even though everyone else always wants to talk about it.
Yeah, we're all married, man.
I know. So here's the situation. I was out and, man, I really hope this person doesn't listen to this. This is going to be very embarrassing. But basically, like,
just be honest, come on, let it
as
out,
like
dude.
A music journalist, it's like, it's hard for me. I'm like sort of opinionated and it's hard for me to, hide my opinion if I like or don't like something. And so I was out with someone and she was going to see this band that I am not a fan of, but her and all of her friends are from her hometown. And I didn't really realize this. And they were going to the show after and she said something like, we got drinks before. And then she was like, we're going over the show now. Like, it's too bad. Like, I couldn't get you in, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you know what? Actually, it's fine. And like, could have totally left it at that. Instead, I was like, you know what? I got to say that not really my thing. And then she's like, oh, yeah, blah, blah, I get that, blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, I'm not into bands that use props. And it was like, I think it sounded very dismissive. Like, I was like, I like bands that sort of like, you know, like can just, you know, like put on a show with their instruments and they don't need like a bunch of like props and costumes and stuff. To me, that's like a little bit. And then I kind of like in the back of my head, I was like, Jonah, just like let it go, man. And then it sort of became this whole thing where like we met up with their friends and then they were like, we're excited for the show. And she's like, yeah, Jonah hates this band. And then like someone else came. And then I felt like I was just the guy shit talking the fun thing everyone was doing,
but not really. The party pooper.
Yeah. And so that was me. And I felt kind of bad, but I also was like, you can't also just like pretend you like everything. You know what I mean? Like, at some point, like, you have to just be like...
Dude, you're preaching to the choir here, baby.
Yeah?
I shoot my mouth off way too much.
Yeah.
Regarding stuff like that. Yeah. I get it.
And speaking of, you know who I wish I had with me was today's guest, who is, I would say, writes about relationships a lot. He's a bit of an expert.
He could have got your back.
Could have got my back. Tim Kasher. Been on the podcast before. His latest solo album, No Resolution, is out now. And he's just finished the first leg of a U.S. tour. And May 26th, he's starting back up. And he's doing the South, East Coast. He's to be playing New York June 3rd at the Knitting Factory. Doing a bunch of shows with Alison Weiss. And it should be really interesting. He's he also, you know, did, you know, this album, his latest album is going to be the soundtrack for a film that he's coming out. That's going to be screening. We talk about that a lot here. But yeah, Tim, you know, obviously Cursive, The Good Life. And yeah, he's on tour now, solo tour. So definitely check that out. Check out his newest record. On the live music front, Sam I Am. Also playing some shows. Did you know that, Brad?
Sam I Am. I want to go see him in Pennsylvania. We should go.
Legendary
Brooklyn
show.
It's like a beer fest or something?
We should go. Yes, June 9th, Garwood, New Jersey at Crossroads. I believe that is somewhere in New Jersey. You can check it out at Ticketfly. And yes, the show you're referring to, June 10th. They're headlining the Neshaminy Creek Brewery's five-year anniversary party with a free show on June 10th in Croydon, PA, and it's free. I think that's a suburb of Philly.
If that is, we should do a road trip, dude.
Let's do it. All right. They're also heading to Europe in July. Maybe we can go there.
Let's do that, too.
Check out their Facebook page at Sam Am Fancy. Free beer, free Sam Am show. Sounds great. Tim Kasher, on tour now. No Resolution out. Amazing dude. Let's get into it with Tim.
Steven, how's it going with that mic over there?
I'm getting it here.
We were just talking about the soundless room. Drink. And that the totally soundless room was... You can't stay in it for more than 10 or 15 minutes because you start hearing your blood and your heartbeat and weird stuff. And you start going crazy.
I would feel like my tinnitus would just drive me insane.
I don't think I would do well.
You can hear yourself age.
Yeah.
What's like the longest you think you could last?
Tim, what do you think?
You could plenty long, I'm sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, but you'd actually really enjoy it after a while. I oddly had tinnitus last night after that hard and heavy acoustic set. Isn't that weird? I was really surprised by it.
Was it when did you notice it? When you got home?
Kind of that time that you do, like kind of like laying, like it wasn't even like quite laying down in bed, but I kind of got back to where I'm staying, sat on the couch, and it was like kind of quiet enough in there. It's late at night, and I was like, oh shit. Must have just been really crowds, you know, it was just loud crowd of people.
Yeah.
During the show, but just like we hung out for a while afterward.
We did. Yeah, I saw Tim play last night, Union Pool.
Right on.
It was great. I hadn't seen you play solo acoustic in a really long time. Maybe that show you played with Steve Brodsky.
Oh, right. I'm going to remind you when you did stand up.
When I did that beach slang thing? Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
This is when you roasted beach slang?
Yes, when I roasted beach slang.
I was part of that show. Yes. Because I just came out and did like three shows with beach slang.
What was like the highlight zinger of that roast? Because I missed it.
I was really nervous. What was the highlight zinger?
Did you have any Weston ones?
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, I had one. Vanessa helped me write it. I was like,
you almost got beat up after the show.
I was like, their most famous record is "Got Beat Up." Why? And if you look at James, you can see why it was named after. I said it looked like he was the only rock star sponsored a clothing sponsorship from Oshkosh B'gosh.
That's right.
That was a good one. A lot of jokes about listening to records in your basement. They were really good sports.
They were good.
But yeah, you played that show. And that was really fun.
And Tim, how do you feel like you would stomach a roasting?
Yeah. You've never asked me to roast you.
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that they're just uncomfortable in general. I'm not comfortable watching them.
Those Comedy Central ones have gotten pretty
brutal.
And
that one that you did, that wasn't even really, that was just stand up. That was just some like lighthearted ribbing.
That's true.
You ever seen like the old historic ones? There's this documentary series on CNN right now, which is like the only good thing on that channel. And it's about the history of comedy, and it talks about how vaudeville was like super clean with stand up, but then the strip clubs was like where you could go off. And this is where like Lenny Bruce, Red Fox, Richard Pryor like would go crazy. And then, but all these vaudeville comics loved to get dirty. So the roasts, the Friars Club was where everybody could do it all. And apparently Johnny Carson just filthy.
Yeah.
Like they loved you. It was like the one place where neither the twain shall meet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then every joke like revolved around Milton Berle's cock at some point. So
could that exist anymore in the age of the video phone? Could you even get away with it? Because Carson would be too scared to tell those jokes because he would think someone was sneaking on him.
But I think that's okay. There's also, isn't there kind of like a code amongst comedians? I mean, that was like Bob Saget's whole thing.
Right.
It's like everybody knew he was filthy, but he could still do Full House.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was like, it was fine. I was like, well, no, he's a comedian. He's a really dirty comedian.
Apparently Carson's
or
favorite
not.
Joke.
Maybe you're right. Or it could be that it's all become so hyper... in 2017.
Can't get away with
Saget is doing Fuller House these days.
Oh, that's true,
man. Is Saget out there doing his...
Probably not anymore.
Crusty business?
I don't think he can.
Tim, I knew we were going to get to this, but have you watched any Fuller House yet?
I've watched all of them.
Really?
Yeah.
Because when we had Kyle Mooney on the podcast, he was like, if you watch it and think of like
it as like an Adult Swim show, it's sort of amazing. He was like,
"Wait, I know nothing about it. Are we talking Candace Cameron?
Yeah,
Cool
yeah.
Gay,
it's
like
a full reboot
cast?
Netflix did without the Olsons, but
without
I think
they
wouldn't do it.
Swing the Olsons,
no. Because yeah. they're dripping in cash.
Yeah,
they don't need
but I think
it.
Yeah,
they
everyone else it. Did it, and I think
they're somehow above it.
I mean, literally, it's like, how can you be bougie about it when you were literally like, they did nothing to earn that role? You
no,
know?
I know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's true.
They
showed
up. Was born cute. And yeah. then they got on a show.
They were born monkeys.
So that sense of entitlement, when I feel like they should almost be like, you know what? We got lucky, like in the game of life.
Yeah, because their parents trademarked them and then made straight to DVD movies.
All they had to do was like not fall and hurt themselves so they're not cute anymore. That was their only responsibility.
Stay yes. away from
it's
the
like,
stove.
Oh, is this shooting schedule interfering with your coloring?
Exactly.
Like, yeah, what else are you doing? Nothing.
So I'm actually finding their being off Fuller House a little reprehensible. I feel like they owe it to us.
Johnny, were you at Fuse when Jodie Sweetin was there?
No.
Oh, okay. I was pretty excited. I worked with her for a little while.
You did?
Yeah, and she was hilarious.
I feel like I like her.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun.
She's the friend across the street?
No. She's the sister.
Stephanie Tanner?
Yeah, Stephanie.
Yeah, yeah. So she worked for a little bit. And
no, DJ. Wait.
No, Candace Cameron's DJ. Or it's DJ.
Text Vanessa.
No, it's Stephanie. It definitely is.
It is?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it is.
She was cool. She hosted Pants Off, Dance Off. Remember that show?
Yes.
No.
Oh, God. It was the stupidest show. It was like people just getting naked to videos. It's the dumbest.
So, do you want to hear something grody about me in Fuller House?
Yes, please.
Yes.
I didn't even watch Full House growing up.
How did you start?
Wow. I started, I was like, what is this Fuller House? This seems pretty cool.
So you had no context on it.
I had a little, I have like the context of like I grew up in America.
Okay. So you were aware of it, but never watched it really.
Yeah, just like really, yeah. Just like it was like it missed my like bracket.
So what
my
drew
age bracket,
you? What drew
of.
You to Fuller House?
Yeah.
Just boredom, or
yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, so I'm married, and we watch a lot of like really pretty much the really we seek out the really bad stuff. We watch a lot of Lifetime movies.
Okay. Mm.
And she did watch Full House, and so I was just like, was this something? Are we Fuller House is happening soon? Is that what does that mean? She's like, oh, it means we're watching it. For sure. I was on board. I didn't fight it.
Yeah.
It is. Wow. Mooney probably puts it well. It is like this weird, it's kind of wild. It's a little wild.
Yeah. Maybe I should watch it.
It's a sitcom. It's like actually a sitcom the way.
Is it live audience? Is it that?
Yeah. I think, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. As far as we can be led to believe it's a live audience. Yeah, I'm sure it's a live audience.
Who were the new, like, do Stephanie and DJ Tanner and stuff have kids now?
They sure
and
do.
They have like
darn
cute.
Cutin'.
Yeah, like little.
Are they cute? Yeah, they're cute as a bun. Yeah. They're really cute.
What's
maybe
Stamos
not Olsen
is...
twin cute, but they're darn
yeah,
darn
sure,
cute.
Sure. Huh.
There is one, and I just wish I could remember his name right now, just to really like push my Fuller House cred.
But sure.
There's this kid, and he says "Holy Chalupas" a lot. They they're really pushing, just as you would. You know, they're pushing that.
Catchphrase.
Because I know, even not watching Full House the first time around, I know what "cut it out" means. Again,
right,
like
sure.
I grew up in America. You
need
know?
The catchphrase.
Yeah, and how wooed. I know how wooed.
What were your kind of sitcoms growing up? What were the ones that you were really into?
Three's Company, which I still love.
Nice.
Three's Company's great.
Yeah.
I had a great, this is a good tale of being growing up and going to Catholic schools. There was, you know, a priest came in one day. Every now and then a priest would come in and teach religion class. And the trick this priest pulled on me specifically, I didn't realize that at the time, but said, everybody write down, like, what's your favorite show? Everybody write down your favorite show. And then we go through one at a time. Everybody's like saying, and it's Little House on the Prairie and stuff like that. Like, that was a popular show. And it got to me. And I said, not Three's Company. I said, Three's a Crowd, because that was like what was. Happened that was like
you go for all the sequels first.
yeah well no that
did you
was
see
just...
Phantom Menace before Empire, or how did that work?
I haven't seen Empire yet, but but you know, as I said, there's a crowd and everyone went ooh,
really?
And the priest singled me out and said, see kids, this is the type of show you shouldn't be watching,
because they were living together unmarried.
Yeah, oh, it's just this racy, and yeah, I guess whatever was happening. Yeah,
there's
just
two ladies in a
well, Three's Company. Is he pretended to be a homosexual?
Yeah, that it just is like racy, joke. Bad stuff that kids shouldn't be watching. But I was so like thrown under the bus. It was really rude. Yeah,
so
I remember it. I still remember it. It was rude.
Yeah, that is.
What
pretty
if they're
rude.
Right and it did contribute to your alternative lifestyle through life, and you wouldn't even know? You know,
I hope it
how
did.
The fuck would he know?
Well, you
the,
wouldn't.
That's what I'm saying.
I remember.
Maybe they're right this whole time. Maybe all of us would be super squeaky clean people if it wasn't for our 80s and.
I appreciate I appreciate the advocacy, but no, never trust someone who's celibate.
I used to hate that show Mama's Family so much that when it yes. came on, I would just start crying. Oh. When like the theme song came on, I would just burst into tears.
The power of Vicki Lawrence would tear you up.
Yeah. I wasn't allowed to watch G.I. Joe and anything with violence. And I wasn't allowed to have water guns and stuff like that. I couldn't watch all those awesome shows where people got blown up.
I think it's
and I'm totally averse to it now. So
there's something
they
to it.
Indoctrinated
man.
Me, but maybe the right way. I'm not
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it seems a little extreme, but it's. I wouldn't be opposed to if any of you parenting right now said that that's what you did with your kids.
It's one of those things. I've
guns
also are,
guns
found,
aren't cool.
Yeah, no. Exactly. I found it extreme too, and then I grew up and was like. Yeah, it's extreme, but I don't know. There's other kinds of extreme that could have been way more detrimental.
Well, and there's other, and there's also the converse extreme that can happen as right. a result of that. Like the kid who in my class, Brent, who was not allowed to eat candy at all, and so when he found candy or was given candy, he freaked out and just like shoved. I would see him just shoving like M&Ms in his mouth. So you could have like. Become a gun, toting crazy person.
Been shoving bullets into your mouth.
Yeah.
How do you guys know?
Just shooting guns in your mouth.
So what's sort of like the pyro budget and that kind of stuff for your film? Is there a lot of shootouts?
Yeah.
A lot of explosions.
Yeah, there are.
Tim
lots
made a film that's coming out soon.
Where's the film coming out?
Well, I'm going to take it around the country myself later this year. This is my form of self-distribution.
A la Kevin Smith, Crispin Glover?
Yeah. No one can stop me.
No.
So, yeah, I'm going to take it around myself. And then after that, put it out onto like Amazon and iTunes and stuff like that. And I haven't really like selected that
date yet. You're going to do the full, you're going to do like the experience of you get to hang with me afterwards and do a little Q&A and...
Do like maybe a VIP package.
Some people, I'm pretty sure that's what Kevin Smith did with Red Scare. He just toured it himself and then said, I'm going to hang out and tell stories. Here's some of the cast. Talk, you know.
Right.
Like a little mini Comic-Con.
Well, what I am going to do, I do hope to, I want people to see the movie and I want people to see it like as a captive audience, like publicly. In a public space versus like your couch, you know, just because that's my preference because I love going and seeing the movies. I like it to be an event. So I am going to go to I'm going to tour it myself and then like do a Q&A and then play a show afterward.
That's great.
So that's my motivation.
How long have you had the idea for a film in your head?
For a long time. I've been writing them for 10 years now and I've kind of gone through like ups and downs of, like trying to get them made and then them falling through. And so this was the first time where I finally was just like, I really need to just do this myself. And, like funding it myself. As you can imagine, it's low budget. It's a real crew and it is a really my apartment, you know, where I shot. But that's frankly, I think I probably could have had like, a handful of movies under my belt already if I would have just done this from the get-go. Because this was the same attitude I had 10 years ago when I started writing scripts. I wrote scripts that were intentionally low budget that I knew I could handle myself. But then they would just get, they would get tied up in a positive way. They'd get tied up with people who were interested and excited about it. And they'd be like, oh, we're going to find some money. We're going to, you know, find some real money for you. And we're going to produce this. We're going to get a proper cast. And whenever you hear that, you're like, well, that's great. That sounds potentially great. But I just want to make sure it gets made.
Right.
And, And then they would never get made. They would get lofted up so much and then fall through, and I'd be left with nothing. And so this time around, I was like, I can't let that happen again.
Do you ever get, obviously you guys have Cursive as a song, Art is Hard. Do you ever get discouraged by how little of the artistic process seems to be actually making art, and how much of it is all this other bullshit that takes up so much of your time?
It takes up a ton of my time because I do so most everything myself. It's the way a lot of us are,
Right.
Because so much of it is, it's just a bit, the boring parts of running a band is a small business.
And you just started a record label.
I'm a small business owner.
Yeah.
And it's a band and a record label. And
what keeps you from just being I'm just not going to get out of bed today. I don't want to deal with all this stuff.
Well, I should say it's because it's really never that bad.
Yeah.
That's probably why. But I get frustrated sometimes. If I could just live a totally pampered, spoiled existence, I would just get up and only have, my only responsibility would be to play guitar and to write scripts. But there's a lot of other stuff at play too. But not that much. I do live a pretty pampered existence.
Right. Do you like living in L.A.?
I do.
Yeah.
A lot. Yeah.
Whereabouts?
I'm in Silver Lake.
All right.
It's been a lot of fun. And that's another, if we're talking about pampered existences, my experience there is so unique because I work from home and I live in a neighborhood that I can get around really easily. So I just ride my bike around. I'm not that far from, maybe we talked about that last night a little bit. I'm not far from the train, and the train actually does go some places.
Yeah.
It's a lot different from, I know you spent some time in Montana and grew up in Nebraska and stuff. Is the idea of living in LA, being in a downtown, being able to walk places, and just is that just a nice feeling at this point, or is it something you look for in your life now?
That's a good way to put it, because it absolutely is. I think that I just got, despite touring all the time and always being traveling in vans, I don't care for cars, and I love not having a car. I love to not get in cars if I don't have to. And LA is the wrong city for that, yeah, obviously.
I was going to say. Yeah.
but I'm making it work. Okay. So
yeah, that neighborhood is, I lived out there and that's exactly why I lived in Las Feliz 1,000 years ago. And I was shoot, man, Trader Joe's is right here. I can go home. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm just kind of down the street from there. I'm down Hillhurst, becomes virtual.
So, oh, yes.
And I'm just down at the bottom of virtual.
Thomas Starr King Middle School. I used to teach there.
Oh, yeah, all right. Oh, yeah.
You taught?
Yeah, man.
What'd you teach?
I was a sub, so I was.
So you taught it all.
So sandwich making?
Taught it all. Yeah, buddy. So many.
That torpedoes. Was good. Thank you. Thanks, that was
good. And he's here, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my God.
Put that one on the board.
I just heard yesterday, Jonah, that the chicken they use at Subway is 42% meat.
I saw an article about that today. Yeah.
42%?
Which means it's almost vegetarian.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think that we should all just champion that.
Why not?
Fine. Did you like it before? If you liked it, then it's fine.
Yeah. I was listening to my friend's podcast today, Kissing Contest, and all the guys tried to eat 20 Taco Bell tacos throughout. They spent $100 at Taco Bell.
Okay.
And they were talking about the meat in there, and they were like, growing up, we heard it was just powder that you used to pour water into, and it turned into meat. That doesn't seem like it is.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem possible.
Yeah. That's how everything at Taco Bell comes. It comes freeze dried. But how? They have to
even add the meat?
No, I didn't know the meat, but I know the beans.
Really?
Are that. I know. Have you ever seen the guac, the caulking guns?
No.
The guac.
Oh,
guns.
Yeah, yeah.
Come out of?
Yeah. You know?
The guacking guns.
Yeah.
That was a very joke. You've been too much time with Jonah.
I learned from
the
master.
That's an old man joke. I like that.
It was Arby's for me. That was the story. And I think that also is true. My impression is that Arby's beef, roast beef, comes it's a pink liquid or something
Oh, really?
That.
Yeah.
And then it forms.
They flatten in a flat iron.
I think they...
Like that. You know what it's called, Arby's? One of my favorite dumb facts. You know what?
They took some flack for
Arby, roast beef.
Ooh. I like
take
it.
Take that one.
Arby's.
Deposit it. Arby's. Pull it out when you need it.
Apparently, I actually read they took a lot of flack for this fake meat pink slime thing and came out about how real their meat is.
Mm-hmm. A lot of places got hit with the whole pink slime thing, and I'm someone who regularly shoves Wendy's chicken things in my child's mouth because that's the only chicken, quote unquote, chicken she'll eat.
Okay.
I'm like, well, it's something. I'm trying.
Tim, are you pretty healthy these days? I mean, I imagine since you're on the road less, maybe it's probably you're not just at rest stops all the time.
I oddly probably eat better on the road.
Really?
I think probably because I'm surrounded by people better than myself who insist on going to Whole Foods to do salad bar. And okay. And I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And so I eat better as a result.
So you pay for it and that'll be $46.
Yeah, I know. It's rough. God,
fuck them.
Something I was wondering about to completely change topics. But we've talked a lot on this podcast before about like almost how Jonah and I grew up in these like very specific scenes in like Cleveland and New Jersey and these hardcore scenes, and the stuff that came out of there was very unique to the region it was in. And like the Omaha scene and the Saddle Creek thing was like, I think, a benchmark for that for a lot of people. Like, just wow, there's this scene where all these people are coming out of, they all work together, they plan their records, and I know a lot of people were trying to do that, almost model it off of it. But the thing we've talked about a lot is basically the question I'm getting to: do you think the Omaha scene and the thing you guys created is possible today in the world of social media and home recording, and the fact that these local scenes are less created from the ground up and people are so much faster to leave their scenes and create other things and maybe not feed off each other as much? Like, do you think what happened there is even possible anymore?
I don't know. I wasn't sure where you're going with it. Now I understand.
It was a long way there sometimes.
So it's like kind of a it can be like, what can be a problem with the internet bringing us all closer, maybe globally, but then what happened to the village? Like, maybe we're losing the village as a result.
It's like you can now just email an idea to somebody and go, expound on this, and email back.
Yeah,
and not leave your house.
And also maybe we are a group of 20-year-olds and we're doing a band, and like one of our closest, you know, colleague peer bands is across the country in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why? How? It's like, well, because the internet just kind of brings us closer together, and maybe that's fine too. Maybe that's good too. Maybe that model that Saddle Creek ended up being is going to be found in a different model. Like, maybe there's like newer internet models that are going to like pop up that will be like, oh, you know, the so-and-so scene. It's like that Seattle band, that Missoula band, the Sarasota band.
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry.
I just remember being really confused when Saddle Creek, like when they started signing bands from outside of Omaha, when it was like Rilo Kiley and then all these other bands. And then I remember being like, oh, I thought this was like this local label and all the bands here are so awesome. But now I remember it being confusing because for so long it seemed like it was such an insular thing.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't totally speak on their behalf, but I think that they never wanted to be. I think it was like local by way of these are the people that we know and these are the people that would allow us to put their albums out.
Yeah.
But I think they were, I think they were kind of excited about branching out.
I'm sure. And I remember in that documentary, did you ever see the documentary?
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was sort of being this scene about like you and Connor sort of like not being in competition with each other, but sort of like having kind of, you'd put out a record, then he would. I mean, do you still feel like stay up on what those people do, or feel like you're inspired by them, or are you kind of more like everyone's kind of grown?
You know, I think it's really unfortunate to say that this is, I think this is, I mean, this is, it's not like it's awful to admit, but it's awful to feel this, that that inspiration plateaued somewhere along the way. Mm-hmm. And that sucks.
Yeah.
And that's back to like the idea of like the village and, you know, like that's, we all kind of grew up and grew out of it. And I think about it sometimes because I think, you know, it's like, well, am I not? So that that conversation, just to kind of like build on that a little bit, is that's, we all talked about that back in the day. That's what we did. Is it wasn't really competition, but it, I mean, it kind of was, but it was like 100% positive competition of, right. Lullaby for the Working Class would put a new record out and we'd be like, oh, that's amazing. And we'd joke around and be like, we got to do a record that good now.
Right.
And so like the next person would, you know, and the next thing would happen.
But that's not a joke, is it? Like, yeah. I mean, I remember being in those similar situations, and even though, like, you're rubbing elbows with your friends, you're like, all right, we got to beat this record.
Yeah.
Like, you actually mean it, right? Like, you really do like, want to beat that record.
Yeah,
like,
you beat it, or at least just be like, there is a standard that is being set here.
Yeah.
And
sure.
If you're not meeting the standard, then you're letting your friends down. You're letting yourself down. And that kind of spirited competition is like was really healthy.
Totally.
And so we did all kind of like let each other be like, we let ourselves be very influenced from each other, but maybe not so specifically by chording and melody. I think that just kind of happens like homogeneously, but maybe by that standard, you know, that subjective standard that we felt like was being set,
mm-hmm.
that we felt like we had to do. But yeah, again, sadly, I don't have that with anybody anymore. Or you can't have that your whole life. Maybe that's
yeah. I think that's,
yeah. You've grown up, Tim.
Yeah,
you've
right.
You kind of like it is.
Yeah. You just kind of go like, okay, I guess this is just how I write music.
And now it's but like what Benny's saying now, I think it's going to be interesting. It's like we met on this chat page. You know what I mean? Like it's going to be groups of people who find like minded folks,
right?
Throughout the
well, and
globe.
I believe that's even the danger of it. I mean, we could talk. It's a long conversation politically about the fact that how like-minded people found each other on the internet is certainly one of the reasons we're in the landscape we're in right now.
Yeah, but then that falls into that whole big data thing where now people have found out how to target it. You know what I mean?
Well, right. Well, the point I was making is if you had these scenes, right, and automatically it's like, okay, oh, you sound like this. So now you're going to get paired with this band from Seattle that sounds like this instead of what you're talking about, which is like we're a bunch of people who just live in this area. We're not going anywhere yet because mm-hmm. it's really hard to get out of your town for a while. And that's why we're going to like, oh, I'm going to play this. I'm going to play this. We're going to be in the same show. We're going to be in the same bar. We're going to be in the same place. And there is something organically that happens from that I fear is going to go away.
But it's also not our wheelhouse anymore. It might be happening. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it is.
Maybe it's not. Maybe we're holding on to the impossible past.
I feel like there's...
I am.
And maybe this is too big a city to be comparable, but I've been excited / trying to keep my ear on like Philadelphia. And it feels like there's been a lot of excitement, like brimming... And some of my favorite bands have been, you know, the bands are just feel so big now, but like Hop Along and Beach Slang were not big bands years ago, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff going on. Dan Ozzie did that article about all the bands in Philly.
Yes.
They were all, I had no idea, went through all great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some good ones.
It's nice to hear about scenes, you know?
It sounds like it was like a lot of positivity and a lot of friends, and a lot of doing shows together.
They've got a good base there. Like the Union, the R5 guys we've had on, like mm-hmm. Union Transfer, it's very, this is what we're doing. I'm from Northern Virginia, mm-hmm. so it reminds me of like the 80s, where it's like, this is where these shows are, and this is where this happens. They're not where you think they are.
I've talked about Sean Agnew and R5 in a lot of conversations like this. I think it's like nice to mention how important a great promoter can be to cultivate a scene. And it's not just a matter of, oh, he brought in a lot of, you know, like he brought in a lot of cool bands that we got to see. It's like, because if a great promoter who really cares is bringing all those shows in, that promoter, said promoter, is also then kind of like bringing all that influence in.
Yeah.
And all those ideas. And that's like, so all of those younger musicians, they're taking all, sure. I mean, you know, it all works. It's like an ecosystem.
Yeah, you're harvesting a local scene.
Yeah.
Even local bands opening those shows and being on those shows. Yeah.
Promoters sure. being overlooked, the overlooked heroes of a certain.
That's a good promoter.
A good promoter. Yeah, you know what I mean? Very key. It's a good promoter. We in Omaha, there's Mark Leibowitz and Jim Johnson, and these guys like worked really tirelessly for years and years, just trying to build something. And it was just like, and now that's their, you know, like their small empire in Omaha. They're doing great. But for the longest time, it was just.
Are those the guys who do the slowdown?
It's not actually. They do waiting room. It's okay. another room out there. But yeah, I mean, you know, it was after work and on weekends for the longest time, never making any money, but just loving music and loving being a part of the community. And they've done a great job.
Yeah, I don't think I could ever do that. I feel like I'm just not good at dealing with money. And I feel like that would be really hard.
Well, you're also doing something like you and, you know, we're just joking, but it's true. It's like a good promoter. Dude, and it's like, because it's a thankless job. It's mostly a thankless job. And, you know, I don't know. You can probably even be accused of like being a sycophant or something or just like.
Right,
dude,
right.
I just learned about like the history of Bill Graham and like where he came from and how it started. Like, no idea, like escaped the Holocaust at age 11, like before he even got to the States.
Mm-hmm. And fake news, bro.
Hmm?
Fake news.
Oh, that's true. You're right. It's totally fake. He didn't do that at all. But like he tells a story about how one of the reasons he changed the game was that he had a partner. I think his name was Chet Helms, and how he asked a certain group, like, hey, can I be exclusively like your promoter? Can I just do that? No one had ever done it before. And he got up early in the morning to call, and then his partner got really angry at him. I heard this on the Dana Gould Hour podcast. His partner got really pissed off and said, I can't believe you did that. And he said, well, the only way you would find out is if you had called and tried to do the same thing. So get up earlier. And then from there, it like broadened, and like his like Live Nation bought out his company after he passed away. Like everything has changed in that. And that's, and they're like, you know, an empire that's great if you're huge, you know?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, that's another point of why someone like Sean Agnew is so important. Yeah. I mean, literally, if those holdouts weren't still around, I mean, it would be like every tour brought to you by Live Nation at the House of Blues in every city in America. It would be the most boring shit.
Dude, I've been in there, the Live Nation headquarters, and no, a few people.
I'm imagining it floating.
Don't they have a venue in there?
Lasers,
or am I thinking of Clear Channel?
Each floor is devoted to an artist. So when I was there working,
each floor
I was
has
on the
one
Shakira
artist caged behind the front desk. An old former 70s, 80s artist. They're paid a living wage.
I wonder why you haven't seen Santana in a while.
Yeah. He's there.
What are you doing?
Fourth floor.
So each
it's pretty smooth.
I was just talking about Smooth with my sister. You know, that's like the most popular song of all time or something?
No.
It's
in the Bear household.
I was on the Smooth Wikipedia page, and I was like, this song is like the biggest song ever or something.
Tell us why you were on the
Smooth
Wikipedia
page. Your weekly check-in with the Smooth Wikipedia page.
I don't know. If you saw my internet history, it would just terrify you and confuse you. Tim, what was it like? I really want to get the subject off me.
Deflect.
What was it like? So you played last night.
Strong journalism.
Yeah. Was it the first? I'd imagine it was the first time you played a lot of those No Resolution songs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it always a weird feeling playing songs for the first time live? Like, are you scared you're going to forget lyrics?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you have cheat sheets?
No, I don't. But I do have a lot of anxiety dreams in my life of not being prepared. And I was really proud of myself by the end of that set that I rehearsed the songs and memorized the lyrics well enough to get through 98% of it.
Yeah, it was great.
Thanks.
How are you? I noticed on the record there's quite a bit of string and key arrangements on the record. How are you doing that live this time?
So last night I just played totally solo. I'm going to Europe next week, and that's a place where I don't make very much money. But I am still bringing a cellist with me just to help with some of that accompaniment.
Okay.
So that's like really spare, but it's nicer than it's a little something. The touring we're doing in the States this like in the coming months, it's a string duo.
Oh,
so
cool.
Cello and violin, so at least we can capture the harmonies. And on keys, the doubles is like in vibraphone and trumpet.
Okay.
And percussion.
What was it like with the cello parts on the Ugly Organ? Were those written by you guys, or were the how did that work?
Greta, that we it was her. That's the way we've always that we do it with Cursive, and the way I do it with Good Life too was kind of give people like their like that's your
okay
department. So yeah, that was her.
So you're not like I want you to play this. I want you to play this.
Or it depends. Yeah, you have to go song by song.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Some of it is me too. But
right.
But I don't want to like discredit that she brought a lot to the table as well.
They said you're going to Europe, and it's not a big moneymaker for you, which leads me to I listen to the record on the AV Club.
Hey.
It's like my favorite website in the
me
world.
Me too. I go to it too often.
Too often. I'm like, why isn't Newswire refreshed yet?
Yeah.
Someone must tell me something I don't know. Dopamine.
They come up with just such great articles. It's like they know me so well.
It's everything. And I'm full on into the cultivation of experts. And growing up, who'd have thought I would watch a TV show and then wait for the review. And then read it and see. I did not see that stray observation.
You're such a
thank you.
Nerd,
so no idea. Fucking nerd. It's like Supergirl. What? Of course it's John Jones, Martian Manhunter. Doy. But how do you choose, like, you know, you got your own label now. And I think it's fascinating that they say, stream the whole album right here. You know?
Uh-huh.
So, yes, I listened to it. I have not purchased it yet. But I listened to the whole thing and enjoyed it. But, like, what's that process of thinking, how am I going to market my art now in this world that anybody can grab it for free?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be an angle I'm going to choose?
Yeah. I wish someone would tell me.
Well, your own label's the first step, right?
I suppose. Maybe. I mean, this question is also complicated. I feel because every year feels a little bit different.
Yeah.
Every album I put out for the last maybe, I don't know, for a while now, the climate has changed a little bit. Like the demographics have changed and the Billboard has changed and, you know, it's very odd, and so you just kind of try to keep up with it. But as a label, now that we've started our own label, it's not it can't be about money making. It's just about owning your own stuff and kind of doing it yourself. But I think it's about reaching out to like-minded individuals. Because, and I can't, sadly, I think I can't even talk for everybody on the label, but I personally, just so everybody knows out there, I was putting my hand up to my to my mouth as if I was telling
everyone
a secret that I shouldn't be saying.
Heard nothing.
This is just between us now, okay?
And then he tilted his sombrero and smiled. Good fashion choice.
But I still, I still love to buy records. Like, I love to buy records, and probably has to do with my age a little bit, and I'm probably kind of like outmoded, but it's important to me, and I like to participate. I like the process of it. And so you're trying to reach out to those like-minded people who also like to do that. But aren't we also trying to maybe entice or encourage other people who don't? You know, it's like, hey, if this is really, you know, if you're listening to this on Spotify, consider having a copy of your own or something, you know? I mean, I don't think I've ever said that other than I just said it just now. But that's kind of what you want, too, just because you are a small business.
Right.
I can't sit here and pretend like I want people to just listen to things on Spotify.
Dude, you know?
I appreciate people listening to things on Spotify. It's like become this whole, we've been getting beaten down for year after year.
Yeah.
When Spotify first came around, I was very vocal of like, fuck these guys.
Same.
Who the fuck are they? And why are we doing this? And it was like, well, what? Oh, everyone's doing it?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I have to do it too.
Taylor's not doing it.
Yeah, but she has the option. I mean, that's where, you know, any artist who's not selling a million copies of their record right now is just straight up shooting themselves in the foot to not put yourselves on Spotify. Like, it's cool to hang by your principles, broke as fuck. But if you want, like, four people to come to your show and buy a t-shirt, you better be on Spotify, because that's how they're all listening to it. And, like, what are you going to do?
And that's, like, and again, and it really, that is, like, that's what I was saying, what, I don't know, 10 years ago now, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever. But it's, like, we do, my point, I guess, I'm making is that I'm, like, very normally, like, we work with Spotify now. You know, like, they are, like, associates. I don't, and I don't mean it in some pissy backhanded way. Mm-hmm. It's just that every year that goes by, every album I release, it just seems like we're getting, you have to get closer and more accepting of the fact that this is a streaming world and that's how music is listened to now. And you just adjust.
And maybe that's
you
the
have
trick,
to, or right? Am I going to not adjust? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And maybe that's the trick to all of it, is that they created something knowing that it was going to be the standard. And I think it's just the person who can foresee what the new standard is who's going to stay ahead of the game, you know? Mm-hmm. And it is. It's like I go through the same thing. Like you keep thinking you're getting your hands on the pulse of what's happening, and just every year it changes. Every year certain labels get worse, radio gets worse, all these things get worse. And then who the fuck knows where it is now, right? Maybe we should just, I think the future is going to be like 30-second ad spots before every song on a record, you know? Like, just sell 20 seconds before your song starts to Hyundai for, I don't know, $100,000. Am I underselling it? More?
It's Hyundai. I did a project integration with Hyundai.
Oh, Hyundai?
I don't know if you saw this.
It's me Hyundai. Vanessa did sorry.
We shot these these sound advice series in LA, and we had to do, I never talked about it before, but we had to, it was fine. We had to do these integrations with a car, so we had to write short commercials with Vanessa's character using this Hyundai Veloster, I think is what it was called.
That's not a thing.
Is that how you say that? I'm getting so schooled on words.
I got corrected.
I was definitely just like Bellow Star or something,
right? I got corrected so many times. Jeez.
You know, I did a Hyundai commercial years ago for the Santa Fe, and we had to say Hyundai the whole time.
What? Really?
Yeah.
Wow. They kept telling me Hyundai.
Getting so thick.
Yeah. But it was challenging to make something, like make art around like a product for sure, and not make it seem super forced, but also not to make it seem like super sarcastic too. Yeah. Like you know, like 30 Rock did a good job of that, but like everyone can't do that.
Dude, it's like PBS. PBS, it's as I watch a lot of fucking PBS from 6 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. It's all children's programming. And before every single show is now, it's not just brought to you by blah, blah, blah. It's commercials. And these commercials are like United Healthcare. Mm-hmm. All these things. Sandals Beach Resorts for Sesame Street. Like, it's all this kind of stuff. And it's all, we're giving you this money to create this thing that goes back. And I think about how, like, well, where does that money go? And how does that pay for Children's Workshop, Sesame Workshop, all that stuff? Like, where does it go to spread out? And then what happened with Sesame Street, who did this business model forever? Yeah. HBO. You know what I mean? So it's like,
that's because trickle down economics don't work.
They don't work.
That's bullshit.
But like, I remember Darren from J Tree. We have a good mutual friend, and he said to him one time, "He's like, I was never worried about the bands and the labels. I was always worried about the fact that I have people who work for me that have healthcare insurance." Mm-hmm. And that's where he's like, "That's where my brain went."
Right,
Tim. And if you had a choice of any company to sell a 30-second spot before a song comes. Oh, man. I'm talking, we can't say like some cool company. It's got to be someone with big money.
It has to be a little bit uncool.
It has to be Netflix for Fuller House, wouldn't it? Wouldn't that have?
Netflix is it's a great choice already because I really like Netflix so much.
Okay. They don't really need ads. They're doing
fine. I've been thinking about Netflix even just as we've been talking about. The obvious correlation of music and film is as far as streaming goes. And how we can, and any of us musicians here can be like, oh, geez, music, what happened to it? It's become debased, but we all love Netflix and like whatever, you know, like it's like, you know, I mean, I respect what's going on with streaming.
I don't complain all that much about it.
I really don't at all anymore either. It really is kind of like about the last 10 years and like the dulling that we've all had to go through, you know.
Is it hard to get your movie on Netflix?
I believe so. Yeah. As far as like filmmaker friends that I have, I'm not planning on getting mine onto Netflix.
No. What about like
Try. I mean, I'll try just for the hell
of it. What about on demand? Like those
I kinds? Also was hoping to do some kind of VOD thing, and I think that might not be quite as easy as I thought. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking forward to is the potential of is Amazon being they're being incredibly. I don't know what's going on behind, you know, behind these decisions, but they're being, or maybe I shouldn't be so conspiratorial, but they are being really supportive of independent film. It's really impressive.
I would worry.
Right. It seems like kind of, isn't it suggestive of, because then somebody like myself turns around and talks to everybody about how. What a pitch I just gave for Amazon.
I guess, but I don't understand.
You know? It's like, these guys are pretty good guys. You know?
I don't understand.
They do own the Washington Post. We need these long hairs advocating for us. How can we do it?
I don't understand why companies like Amazon even advertise anymore. Like, stuff like that where you're like, everyone knows what this is.
Like, these companies, why doesn't Hershey bars? They still advertise.
It's like the Coke and Pepsi
Coca-Cola
argument.
I don't get it.
It's because there's a general business principle that demands growth all the time.
Mm-hmm.
No stagnation. You can never plateau. You can never go down. Constant growth. That's capitalism. And that's how one guy is going to be sitting on top of a fucking pile of money soon enough.
It's 11 people for the entire world.
For now.
For
now.
11. And I think they're wimpy white guys. I think that's
a few. Most. All. I read something in an old interview of yours that really struck with me, which was that you used to like go into bathrooms. And part of your motivation for playing music
I don't like this.
Was trying to, like, you wanted to be one of those stickers you saw in the bathroom.
Oh, right.
And, like, I know this.
This is okay.
All right. Everyone's like, oh,
you
shit.
You spun that well. Spun it good.
Benny's talking about cocks again.
Again.
So that struck me because, like, for so many years, I used to go to clubs and do this, and I would go in a stall, and the little game I would play would be, like, I would choose one sticker in there, and that would be the band I get to join. That would be, like, I'm like, all right, cool. I could be in Less Than Jake. Just cause it's not like I liked Less Than Jake. They just toured and made records, so I was like, cool.
Had
I
stickers.
Could be in Less Than Jake and had stickers. Like, and I loved hearing that because that's such... It's such an honest motivation for someone younger. You just want to be one of them. You just want to be a guy who's in something good enough that someone puts on a fucking bathroom stall.
Yeah.
Which is awesome and pure, and I love that. And again, my long-winded questions is, like, I'm curious what's, like, you're on the wall now. You've been on the wall for a long time, but you... produce a lot of music and you obviously are completely focused on doing that. So what are the new motivations?
I did switch my after I managed to get onto the proverbial
it's gotta change,
bathroom
right?
stall wall.
Yeah.
Then I switched it over to longevity on the short term, I suppose, of just putting that the goal, the incentive of the record that you put out is that it will afford you the opportunity to put out the next record. So kind of like going record to record, which is really kind of the way I've been living for quite some time now, in the sense that there's not some other like residual checks coming in or some kind of salaried monies coming in. It really is I'm working from record to record, but I am.
Right.
So that's great.
Was there a time with Cursive where things like I remember when you guys did that Mastodon tour and were on all these kind of tours with like these bigger bands that were different? I mean, do you feel like that's something you guys would still do, or are you more now kind of focused on like doing shorter tours with
No, yeah, we...
You're still open to it.
Those tours have been really interesting and
Who else was on that? Was, like, Against Me?
Yeah, that is great show. Yeah, Mastodon and Against Me. Really These Arms Are Snakes was on some of it.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah. That band was so good. I love that band.
Yeah, that was the thing, the Roseland, there was a Roseland show.
Planes, Mistaken for Stars, maybe was on some of those shows, too.
They're a great band.
These Arms Are Snakes were on the New York show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With Against Me and Mastodon.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. You guys also did that crazy tour.
I think I was there, too.
With like Interpol and The Cure.
Mm-hmm. That was crazy.
Right? That was so long ago, huh?
Yeah, it was. This is 2004.
Okay.
I think.
Curiosa? No.
Curiosa.
Yeah. Curiosa. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
Great.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I really like a career highlight for sure.
How many shows was that, like a full thing, or was it just
It was 11 shows, I want to say. It was the West Coast.
Okay.
Do you guys want to get into like a little bit of snarky?
Yes.
Like, oh, want some dirt?
It's taking this long?
I was going to wonder if there was a road case filled with hockey jerseys. That was my next question.
There was, we were offered the whole tour, which obviously we would have loved to have taken. And that was even at the time we were just so far at the tail end of so way too much touring, but it was The Cure. So it was like, okay, we will definitely do every show that we can get despite exhaustion. I watched as a side note, I watched The Cure every single night. Like, I never took it for granted. So we were offered the whole US, and then it came back to us that, that actually there was a band that there was this new band, and they were, and they're now being, they're docking, considering putting them on our slot for the East Coast dates. And the way it was explained to us is that they were kind of like buying in. And that, so we couldn't really, it's like, sorry, there's nothing, you know, like,
right.
They're like, they're putting a lot into promotion, and it's like, there's, our hands are tied. We kind of have to let them do that. And that's how Muse got to do the East Coast.
Ah, man.
That is good meat right there.
Sorry, I shouldn't be saying stuff like that.
Of course you should.
Solid meat.
The guys,
it's okay, they're doing awesome.
Theory.
They're great. Yeah, they're like on top of the world. Meat.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in retrospect, that was like promotional money well spent.
Yeah, they've
done really
well. I
think they kind of pulled that one off.
Yeah, at the time, it was like a band that was like, what are they called? Who are they?
Yeah, yeah.
And did you snicker at the idea of this group? You said Muse.
The chip's still on the shoulder.
Yeah. His bass is an iPad.
It's easy too, because I'm just like not really into the band. So
right.
No disrespect, I guess, necessarily. I just, it's subjective, whatever. I don't care for the music.
Yeah.
Big whoop.
So I have a fun game for us, Tim. Mm-hmm. So I reached out earlier to a friend of yours.
Okay.
Asking not about dirt or anything, but just like, what do you think would be a cool question? And he was like, I don't really know how to do this. Well, I already gave away half of it because now you know it's a man. But he's like, I don't know how to do this. I'm like, all right, let's play this game. You're in disguise and you can ask Tim one question. What would it be? I was expecting something. So the game is, I'm going to ask you the question.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like an answer to said question.
Okay.
And then I would like a guess as to which of your friends posed this question.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay? So the text is...
This is a segment we call Benny's Buddies.
Yeah, Benny's Buddies. Well, all of mutual buddies. Okay. So the question is, okay, something that comes up more and more in life as I get older is the balance of holding and honoring relationships... friendship, romantic, etc., with writing songs that are extremely confessional, personal in nature. Do you ever feel an apprehension while writing, like, oh, how am I going to explain this? Or are you able to push it out of your mind and just deal with it when it comes?
I definitely only half listened to this. I was trying to figure out who the person is. But I think I heard the question.
Yeah, really. I mean, I guess really it's about, like, the older you get, and the more relationships get trickier and songs are written in a personal way, how does like balancing those two worlds collide? And does it get mm-hmm. harder as you get older to write personal and confessional material?
Yeah, I think it does get harder. I think it gets harder as you get older because I think you start to feel with age comes like more responsibility of the relationships you have with your family and your loved ones. like when you're younger, maybe you can toss that, you know, like maybe toss it aside a little bit or kind of like throw caution to the wind. But, you know, I think you get older and I think you kind of feel more of like that long haul of the people you're with. Mm. I'm a big, unfortunately, having said that, I'm a believer in that attitude. I can't really remember who to attribute this to, like what writers to attribute this to, but that you have to like abandon your family to be a great writer. You need to like, not like, I mean, that's like a harsh way to put it, but you need to like completely like set aside any of your concerns or just, that's like abandonment in the sense of maybe like emotionally abandon your loved ones to like be able to like write, I don't know, pure.
Is it the idea that if you're like thinking about protecting them at all, you just can't write about them honestly?
Yeah, then you're compromising what you write about.
I mean, it's fucked up, like, but I can see it.
I feel like you especially are someone who's like, you know, we've talked about, you know, Domestika and sort of like family reaction stuff. It seems like you have always sort of put yourself out there in that way.
I do, but I think it is hard, and I don't, I think the question being as you get older, is it harder? And it's like, I think, yes, it does. It does get harder because,
like, what was it
like our time on this planet is like my relationships with my family are getting closer because you kind of, do any of you start to have that feeling that like, these are the only ones that are going to be left at my deathbed? You know, you recognize the importance of those people, and you don't really want to like, you don't want to shit on them, you know?
Right.
Sounds like you're writing stand up, you know, like literally, like it's not like comedy. You have to be able to go, someone's going to get upset.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
What was your mindset like when you were younger? Just more kind of,
I think I certainly was able to, I wasn't as concerned because I do believe in that philosophy that I said.
Right.
I do believe it. It doesn't mean I apply it. I don't apply it, but I believe it's true. And I wish I applied it, kind of, you know, for like my time on Earth. I would like to, you know, I want to be the best writer that I can. And I guess I'm just trying to, but I also don't want to like crush. I don't know, like I have anything so awful to say about anybody. It's well, not like that, you know, yeah. But
it's an odd balance. I mean, I feel like anybody who truly dedicates to something like that, it winds up being a semi-selfish path in weird ways. Like, I always think about that when I'm reading some of these, like, autobiography of a yogi or, like, Krishnamurti, like, some of these thinkers and stuff. And I don't know if it's because of where I'm from, but I'm in the middle of these stories and I always go, wait, didn't you have a fucking family in like Calcutta and like two kids and like all this shit back there? And now you're just in like Switzerland with some other woman, like finding your self enlightenment. I'm like, good for you, asshole. But like, this is kind of like.
That's why you and I are together. Cause I remember we had on the podcast Jonah's old yoga teacher. We had this conversation about Buddha.
Ralph Craig.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Buddha, like Siddhartha said, fuck off to his wife and kid to go off and like, I'm going to find the cure for suffering. Yeah, but like you had a son, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, and I was like, so Buddha's basically like, thanks, but dead be dead.
So yeah, same. So I sort of like appreciate an artist who does commit to something that hardcore, because I'm with you. I'm like, functionally, this makes sense. Everybody needs to be on a platter if you're going to write honestly. But is that like the right thing to do? There's like a moral equivalent to it.
There is a... having worked through all of this problem, there is the benefit of fiction.
Right.
That I think most writers can kind of get to shield themselves behind.
Sure.
And I do that too. And I think that the loved ones in my life, there's just kind of like this pretty unsaid understanding of, we're not going to go into this, or we're not going to talk, you know, like we're not going to mince or, you know, or like parse out like what I'm writing about. Cause I think it can be damaging, to do that, you know, like what if I had to feel like I had to explain myself fully for every song I wrote,
and what if
it would suck?
Yeah. And what if
I don't have to explain myself to anyone, because nobody in my life, in my like close circle it demands that of me.
Mm-hmm. So no one's ever said, that was me, buddy.
Oh, no, people have. But okay. There are also people that aren't really like that. I'm that probably not that close to. and they also oftentimes aren't even accurate. They're not. It's not true anyway, or, you know.
So what do you? What,
I don't know. When I was younger, I think I was a little bit more, I could apologize that I was a little bit more careless with like some of the relationships I was in and stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't, that's, it's not even really an issue for me at the moment because it's like, I don't need to do that. I'm not like, I don't have like bad words to say about people, right. Like at least at the moment. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about writing fiction?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I jump into it every now and then, but I'm trying to stay focused with, whenever I get excited about that, I try to push that energy into another script because I'm trying to keep on certain tracks.
Yeah, that's smart.
So with your scripts, you writing them and selling them and optioning them? Is that what's going on, or you stacking up a series?
I would.
Okay.
Are you interested, Stephen?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Let me talk to my literary agent. Two of my children here, ladies. Does it have pictures they would like?
I can definitely draw pictures.
Fair enough.
Or they could, how about even better, they could draw pictures.
They do love to draw.
Yeah. So, Tim, any clue where that question came from?
Oh, right. Oh,
no,
right.
Back to right. It.
So, you know it's a man, and the way it was stated.
It sounds like a songwriter.
It's a songwriter.
I wonder, you know what? Can I guess?
No.
All right.
you could guess after Tim.
Right. Well, I'm going to... This is going to sound like this could be like I'm going to go with somebody who we were hanging out with last night.
That's who I was going to go.
Okay, with. I'm going to say I'm going to try Kevin Devine because it's very heartfelt. He's a very heartfelt guy. It seems like the type of insightful question he might ask. And because here we are in New York on the East Coast, and so I feel like that could be a mutual friend.
It's a great guess. It's not Kevin Devine.
It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, cuz we saw him last night.
And cuz you know it's got to be someone that we both know too. Kevin is one of those, one of the few, but no, it's not.
Wow, what does he get?
Is it Matt Pond?
It's not Matt Pond.
Could it be like Jeff Rickley?
He's younger and cuter than all these people.
Oh.
Wow.
He has lovely long hair.
I know who it is.
He plays music perfectly.
Oh.
All the time. what else? He hangs a flag of himself behind him while
Chris
Farron.
You put out a split with him.
Yeah. So it was from the almighty Chris Farron.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I can see that.
Who shaped this question for me in a tour van somewhere today.
Good job, Chris.
Yeah. So
he was shaped that in between making blankets at Walmart.
Does he make blankets?
Yeah.
Did he? When he was on, it was when he did all that stuff with that band where they made a blanket. He made a blanket of himself, then he made a blanket of them holding up his blanket, and then they made a blanket of him holding up their blanket with it. And it was like this insane,
funniest dude. God,
his persona is—it's really taken on such a hilarious life.
It really has.
It sure has.
Are you a big like social? Like, are you? Do you check Twitter a lot? Are you not?
Like, much to my chagrin, I do.
Yeah.
I find I'm just irritated with myself that I do.
Yeah.
But.
I saw that you're very, I mean, you seem to correspond a lot with, like, fans on there and answer all questions that come to you and stuff. So, I mean, there's a useful part of that for sure.
Yeah. And you're right. That's a good reason to check it. I also find myself like
keep telling yourself that.
Yeah, right. I know. I find myself also just like looking through all this stupid shit.
Yeah.
You know? And I just try not to. I try to keep it to a minimum. But
has anyone won the free vinyl for life contest yet?
I think that it probably goes through today. So.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wait, what is this contest? Thursday,
March 2nd. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So.
Can you explain the contest? Benny.
Yeah, since this will be like probably in the future, right?
Yeah.
That we're talking of, which we're in the future.
When
now.
Will then be now?
but today being March 2nd is the last day of so 15 Passengers is the label that we started.
Right.
And I came up with what I felt like was a pretty fun idea that since this record is the first release that we're doing, I said, why don't we do a fun little contest, which is win vinyl for life from 15 Passenger. So we're just picking it out of like the pre-orders. Yeah, that was the prerequisite. You had to pre-order the record.
Okay.
And so then we figure we'll just, whoever wins it, we'll put a little sticky up on the wall over at 15P headquarters, and every record that we produce, manufacture, send an extra one over to that person.
That's a great idea.
That's kind of fun.
I love it.
Yeah, it's like I have a lifetime pass to David Bazan shows.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a laminate.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Even house shows?
Any show that isn't a festival or that he isn't there, that he's headlining, he has to be headlining.
What did you do to get this?
They were giving one away a night, but then his manager just sent me one.
Oh.
So he cheated.
He was on a tour where every night he would give away one of them.
Oh.
Wow.
Very generous.
That is. Yeah. It's considerate.
It is pretty considerate.
Hmm.
Have you ever thought about doing the house show type thing?
I had one of my favorite tours that I've done was me and Patrick Newberry, who's a musician friend that we've been playing. He does cursive and solo stuff with me. We've been playing since like 2006 together. It was just him and I in his station wagon, and we did 2 weeks around the Midwest through the management company through Undertow.
Okay, right.
So it was like living room shows,
right?
Which actually ended up being, you know, coffee shops and into galleries and but some actually like totally funny, awesome living room shows too. It was a blast. We had a great time. We did three. This will probably be the last time that I'll ever do a tour of three Wisconsin. We did three shows in Wisconsin.
Wow, how's that possible?
I know.
Wait,
but
Madison,
it was so fun. We loved it.
Eau Claire.
It was Appleton. That's the wing ding. Okay. It was Appleton, Milwaukee, and Madison.
Wow, that's wild.
Three Wisconsin shows.
Yeah, isn't that great?
You might be the only non-polka group who's ever done that.
Now that I've said it, I want to make a point to do it again.
Yeah.
Wisconsin.
I want to wrap up with that. How can people find out about where you're showing the film?
Well, I just keep up with me at, I guess, at 15passenger.com and timcasher.com and Facebook and stuff
like that.
Record
label and production company.
Yeah, I'm doing a wing. I figured, why not? I'll do a wing under that.
Sure.
That's just 15 Passenger Film. I'm going out. We have the West Coast tour dates announced already, and we're going to announce some East Coast dates pretty soon with the full band, and we'll do that through June. And around that time, I'll start promoting to do it all over again, but with the movie for, I think, maybe September or something like that.
Right on.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm stoked about it.
Renaissance man.
All right. Thank you so much to a friend of the podcast, Tim Casher, for coming by. Check out his new solo album, No Resolution. While you're at it, check out Everything by Cursive and The Good Life and Slow Down Virginia and all of his amazing Omaha bands. And he's on tour now. So check him out. Definitely. I'll definitely be at the New York show, June 3rd at the Knitting Factory. And Tim Casher never disappoints as a musician or as a guest.
It's a very good guest.
Very good guest.
Come on again.
Yeah, Tim will definitely be on again.
Go see Sam I Am.
Garwood, New Jersey at Crossroads, June 9th, Ticket Fly, June 10th, headline the Chamonix Creek Brewery's 5-year anniversary party, free show in Croydon, PA, it's free, Europe in July, if you're in Europe, go to that, check out their Facebook page, Sam and Fancy. Thank you to Pulse Music for letting us use their beautiful studio in what area would that be? That's not Midtown, is it Midtown?
I don't know, I'm sure that the realtors have a name for it.
Yeah. I don't know what it's called.
It's like Macy. It's kind of, it's not really.
They're Herald Square.
Yeah, it's Herald Square.
Yeah, Herald Square area. Stephen Grawalski recorded this. Check out Pulse Music if you want to record a podcast with Tim Casher. It's a great spot to do it. You can support this podcast by going to goingofftrack.com. You can also Venmo us at Off Track. That will go straight to Brad's gambling problem. You can also leave us a good review on iTunes. Tweeted us, Facebook. We don't have an Instagram, but you can make one for us. And I think that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah. I think you covered all the bases.
We will be back next week with
another podcast, as we do every Wednesday. So until then, goodbye.
Love you.
Love you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.